Today, we're talking to Matt Hines, founder and president of Hines Marketing, about how to master your sales pipeline. You're listening to Joel Beasley, Modern CTO.
Matt!
Joel, how we doing?
Dude, I think it's been like 15 years since I've seen you.
It's been, even people that I feel like I've seen recently, like I was talking to someone this morning and we're like, definitely have not seen each other since the pandemic. It's, time is going too fast now, to be honest. So.
Yeah. And I ran into you because I was doing an interview with Dominic from 2X Marketing. Mm-hmm. Oh, I asked him what his favorite marketing podcast was. Mm-hmm. And he was like, oh, Matt Hines. And I was like, wait, I know that name. And yeah. So I went and I was like, is it this guy? He's like, yeah. I said, wow, the world is small.
Well, you got to be careful because there's another Matt Hines in our orbit. Like he used to run enterprise sales at Marketo. And I think he's like the CRO at Workfront. He's like a CRO somewhere now. But I used to get a lot more of his emails. And now occasionally I still do. Someone will, autocorrect the wrong Matt Hines.
Nice. Nice. So what does your company actually do? Like on a tactical level?
Yeah, for companies with complex sales cycles, we help them build more predictable pipeline. So it's strategy, process, playbooks to take what is an increasingly complex go-to-market motion for many companies and create some predictability of outcomes. Like how do you make sure you're getting more of the right pipeline more regularly? How do you make sure you're actually hitting your number as those numbers accelerate as you grow? Gone are the days of just sending out an email, downloading a white paper, sending it to an SDR and thinking you're getting an opportunity. It's way more complex internally and externally. And so we help mitigate that complexity and create more predictable outcomes.
So companies, if they have a new product that they're coming up with and rolling out, they would contact you?
They would come if they got a new product, if they're rolling out into a new market. In many cases, companies will say like, listen, we've grown to a certain point just by having great product market fit and inefficient or immature sales and marketing motions. And at a certain point, you kind of hit a ceiling of how well those emotions work if they're not tightly coordinated in a more efficient way. So it's making sure that there's a solid playbook between what sales and marketing's doing. It's ensuring a tighter level of coordination across different channels that are reaching the same buyer and the same prospect on a regular basis. It's bringing in channels and ecosystems that also surround that prospect. Just in those three areas, we're talking about like dozens of complex motions that are happening all at once. And the better you orchestrate that work together, the more efficient it is, the more reliable the results, and the more predictable the outcome as you grow.
I'll tell you what we're doing and you tell me what I'm not seeing. Is that a fun game we can play?
Let's do it.
So we run a bunch of cold email at CMOs and we book calls. We book anywhere from, depending on the time of the year, 30 to 80 meetings a month. And we've tried a number of different ways, whether it's just using a Brevo and like blasting it, or it's using a bunch of individual emails and sending cold email. Is that dumb or not?
No, if it's working for you, it's not dumb at all, right? I think the question is like, will that scale or will that sustain, right? Are there enough new people to add to that pipeline to continue to feed the results you want? And then the other thing I would look at is, depending on the nature of the emails you're doing and what you're asking people for, it could be that you're getting a strong response from a percent, but is there any negative equity you're building with people that feel like it's, I've seen plenty of cold email programs, and I'm not saying this is yours, but yeah. Is it too aggressive? Is it too pushy? And for the people that don't respond, do they now have negative equity around your brand and motion so that they may not respond in a subsequent campaign somewhere? I think about that. And I think, I would agree that automated LinkedIn is challenging. LinkedIn's a very, very noisy place. Our experience is, if you're selling into larger organizations, there's yes, getting response from an individual, but that individual, no matter what their level, is part of a broader buying committee, right? And so there's typically more of an omni-channel approach to those individuals as well as to the broader group of community members. And I also think a big, big opportunity a lot of people are missing today is not just having access with cold messages, but finding the right context, right? Like you don't necessarily need to email 10,000 CMOs today, but which are the 18 you should be emailing today based on what just happened yesterday in their job, in their company, in their industry, with their competition, et cetera. So that context is a data point that is more, that is every day easier and easier to capture. And it allows you to get in front of people with smaller volumes, but with greater response rates because it's hitting at the right time and right place.
Ooh, so some big news breaks in pharma. So I subset my pharma people and provide some highly targeted email. Are you using AI for this?
It's some of it's AI. Some of it's just depending on how well you know your audience. Some of it's just manual sources of data that you can feed into a system and give some triggers. You know, we talk about intent signals now in B2B like it's a common noun, but I think intent signals isn't nearly disciplined enough. To me, there's intent signals, need signals, and evidence signals. Intent signals means like someone probably already understands they have a problem and are starting to pursue solutions. So if you see someone digging around on your About Us page or watching a video, or if all of a sudden they're surging on doing searches for a particular solution, like that's an intent signal. But that's the minority of the market, right? The majority of the market is not exploring solutions, but is exhibiting needs. What do you see from the individual? What do you see from the company that indicates that they have a need and understand that need? They may not have committed to change. They may not be pursuing solutions yet, but you can still engage them around that need. And above need is evidence that there's a need, but that need is not understood or recognized or quantified by the prospect yet. So what you just mentioned is a great example of evidence signals. Something happens to one of your competitors that should change the way you think about your market opportunity. Do they know that that happened? Do they know it happened but haven't really connected the dots on why it's important to them? So that becomes a point at which you can come and provide guidance, advice, value to a prospect to create need from the evidence, right? So I think the more you think about those different stages and the more you map that to where your buyers are in those early stages of the buying journey, the more you can create demand versus just harvesting it.
Ooh, good or bad idea? If I get a sponsor, it's like software, like remote software engineers.
Yeah.
Should I go to their competitors and say, hey, these people are getting into podcasting. We can help you get into podcasting.
Yeah. Yeah. Like a friend of mine took a job at a company about a month ago and just launched a new community in that industry. And so let's say you're a competitor, like let's say I've been talking to someone in that industry about like, hey, here's some ways to create like an own media strategy, right? So instead of just renting attention from Google or from wherever else, how do you create an audience? Just what you're doing, right? Like you have an audience and you're now selling access to that audience to other people. So that's an easy way to quickly do this. It wasn't quick and easy for you to build that audience.
It only took 10 years and about 1,000 episodes.
Yeah, I'm sure every board and PE firm has no problem with that timeline, right? They're totally fine saying like, you got as much time as you need. We're going to measure this in decades, not months and quarters. But yeah, like, I mean, if you've been talking to someone about the opportunity of building out a community and building some owned land, like they're like, okay, yeah, but it's not a big priority. Well, did you know that one of your competitors just launched one yesterday? Right. And it's going to take time for them to build it up, but they are now ahead of you in building in sort of creating owned land in a finite market with a finite set of buyers who have a finite set of attention. So if they get that attention first, if they own and earn that attention first, it's going to be that much harder for you to go and do it, right? So now I am taking evidence and trying to create a little more urgency and trying to heighten the level of need from that organization to actually do something.
Do you do this as a service?
What?
This thing, like, is this what you do for your customers?
Because there isn't a single tool, there isn't a single source of data that can just magically do all this for you. But again, like if you understand your buyers and the buyer journey, if you understand what's the sources of evidence and need that is going to compel action, that is going to help your prospect's day get better. Like what we do is, I mean, you can immediately transition this into sales playbooks. Let's say you've got an inside sales team. Like gone are the days when I want the BDRs to make 100 calls a day, right? Don't just throw anyone in the top of the funnel just because you think they're the right person you should be selling to. Who are the people you should be calling today because of evidence that you found this morning or yesterday? How do you have that contextual conversation? So it becomes a more valuable conversation. You get far better response rates. The outcome is the same. you're still trying to get appointments. You're still trying to build pipeline, and ideally not just appointments because you shoehorn someone into it, but appointments based on someone wants to learn more about a problem or better understand a problem or quantify a problem and opportunity cost they didn't know about before. And you have far more of those conversations. The salespeople call reluctance starts to melt because you're not just calling and trying to like interrupt their day. You're calling with an insight. You're reaching out with something valuable that's going to make that person's day and job better. Like that's, you go from being interruptive to irresistible along the way where you are now that trusted advisor, even if you're just the inside sales guy, but you're coming with insights. It's much more interesting. So yeah, well, your question, this is what we do, right? I mean, so it's, you know, you can't, like most of our clients with these complex sales processes, you can't just increase your Google ad spend and think you're going to get pipeline. You have to work with a level of discipline and precision around some of these different signals to drive repeatable results.
Well, yeah, because you get to the market saturation. There's only so many CMOs in the United States or English-speaking countries. Like they're, yeah, and we know, and we saturate them. And that's honestly, now that you're mentioning it, that's kind of what we've been doing, but not with that intention, because there's only so much of a generic email we can send before we're just exhausting the list. And then we started doing like smaller, like looking for companies that just got funding and saying, hey, you know, something to that degree. But I like this way better. I like this idea of looking at the market and being intelligent about what happened today and using mm-hmm. that as an excuse to connect with a few people. I like
it's
that.
It takes more work. Like it's a little harder. You got to like, you can't just buy a list and send stuff to it. But I think it overall, not only does it, is it a more efficient and more repeatable source of pipeline, but it also, along the way, you're building trust and equity with the audience you're going after, right? So think of what we're doing, like pipeline development, sales and marketing. It's kind of like driving by someone's house at 35 miles an hour and trying to throw something into the mailbox. I mean, you're going to miss most of the time. These poor CMOs, right, that don't have any more time in their day than they did 10, 15, 20 years ago, are getting more and more messages. Kevin, I don't know if you've heard this, the frothiness around AI. Everyone's so excited that I can now generate messages and send messages faster and more efficiently than ever. Faster and cheaper is not the problem, right? Faster and cheaper creates a bigger problem for these poor CMOs that are just getting more stuff now. And so on one hand, you're getting too much content. You don't have time to do your job, let alone engage half of that content. But the flip side of that coin is the fact that we all get spam. We all get interruptive messages constantly, but sometimes one of those unintended, unsolicited messages is actually, in fact, valuable, is actually helpful, is actually landing somehow, either randomly or intentionally, in the right place at the right time. Now, I'm going to miss that message almost 100% of the time the first time because it's just noise. It was a car driving by at 35 miles an hour. Now there's a bunch of shit in my mailbox. And like, I don't, but like, it's the body of work you have to now have to continue the drumbeat of that value. So eventually they start to recognize your content is different and better than others. Eventually they start to see is what you're bringing to them is worth their attention. I think you have to earn that over time with the more senior people we're going after. And that earned attention, that relationship, not only is it owned media, is it owned land, but like it spans platforms. You know, let's say you spent years building up an audience on Twitter and now all of a sudden people start abandoning it. Well, did you lose your audience? No, because the relationship didn't exist on a platform. The relationship existed in the minds of your prospects. You build value and credibility with an audience that goes from LinkedIn to email to X to whatever's next. And that relationship can be with an individual like yourself trying to talk to CMOs. It can also be with a brand that people start to recognize as providing value. When I see your brand's name, I know it's not going to be pitchy. When I see your brand's name, I know that it's not going to be swarmy. When I see your brand's name, I know I'm going to be a better person for engaging with it. Now, you don't do that with a single email, right? I got a cold list, a cold outreach. I'm going to get bad response rates right away because it's cold. But over time, if there's value there, that warms up. Over time, that reputation starts to work beyond you. Over time, you start getting more referrals from your prospects than you do from your customers because of the reputation you have in the market.
I noticed that with my inbox habits. Sometimes I get unsolicited email and it's kind of interesting and I'll see the person and then I don't do anything. Months later after getting their emails for 2 or 3 months and seeing it, all of a sudden that need arises at work. And I'm like, oh, and inevitably 80% of the time they had stopped emailing me. But the people who do stay in front of me, they come up when I search into my email. And then I reach out and contact them and be like, yeah, I've been reading your little snippets. They've been funny and not annoying and kind of interesting. And like, I had no need to reach out, but now I do. It's to stay in front of people without being annoying is the art.
So let me give you an example, kind of from the consumer standpoint. Like, think about how many ads you see for plumbers and tires, right? I feel like plumbing ads and tire ads are omnipresent. You know how often I need tires? Not often. Not every day, not every week like I see those ads. I don't need a plumber until something breaks. So, but when do you need tires? Like when you have a flat, right? When do you need tires? Well, all of a sudden you discover that your tires are bald. You can't wait a month. You need to replace those tires now. You don't pre-schedule a plumber, right?
Yeah.
Something breaks and you need a plumber now. And so if I need a plumber right now and don't know any plumbers, I previously went to the Yellow Pages, then I go to Google, and there's like a friggin' 20 plumbers. Who do I choose? I need someone here right now. Like, who do I trust? Versus if there's some familiarity with the brand. Now, those advertisers are like, they're trying to create a position and trying to create value, but also just trying to create like, you know, unaided awareness. Why can't we play that game from a B2B standpoint? And you could buy all the ads. You could be at all the conferences and premier sponsors. But what if you created something that earned that attention? Is it a blog? Is it a podcast? Is it a video series? Is it a community? Is it just great content across a bunch of channels that compels people to want to listen to you? So that, like, again, like there may not be like a pipeline emergency the same way there may be a plumbing emergency. But if someone says, boy, we're not getting the results we want from our marketing, we need to develop more pipeline, who should I talk to? I don't want to be one of 20 unknown consultants. I want to already have favor with that prospect. I want to already be someone that they feel like they can trust. They may still go talk to other vendors, but I have the advantage in that situation. And in the consumer space, these plumbers and these tire companies are spending a ton of money on paid advertising in rented channels. You can do that in B2B, but you can also spend the 10 years or less. Doesn't take 10, you know, it may not be 10 days. It may not be, I'm sure you started to see that groundswell way earlier than 10 years. But if you have the time and the patience and discipline to build that own land, that is equity, man. That is an advantage that is near impossible to take away from you.
Yeah, it's hard. Like, that's an interesting concept of taking that plumbers and tires advertising methodology and applying it in the B2B game.
Yeah, I think, you know, there's definitely some analogies there. And the biggest part is to just build awareness and advantage and differentiation with your audience before they need you. You know, Gartner did some sales readiness research a couple years ago, and they found that 3-4% of any given B2B industry is actively buying, right? They know they have a need, they're committed to change, they're looking for solutions. 3-4%. 46% of the market is what Gartner calls poised. That means they have a problem, they're not pursuing it. Why? They may not know about the problem. They may not be aware of how big the problem is. They may be aware of how big the problem is, but have even bigger problems that they're prioritizing right now. So our job as marketers, and again, so I got 3-4%, 46%. That leaves another 50% of people that are not actively buying and are not poised and are probably not worth you spending a whole lot of time on them right now. So first challenge, how do you know which is which? How do you know who's in what bucket? And two, how do you start to focus more of your effort on that poised group? Those that are actively looking, like, those should be in your pipeline, right? You should have enough equity in the market. You should know enough about those signals so that those are people you're engaging with already. What is the evidence of poised? What are the signals that imply poised? What are the ways you can put content and insights in front of people, and when they react, it implies poise? For example, this is an example for us. We're doing a lot more work recently with companies around marketing orchestration, right? Really helping sort of with process workflows of how marketing work gets done. We've done some events around collaboration drag. The idea that as you get bigger as a marketing organization, things just take longer to get done naturally if you don't put work management systems in place. And so if I do a webinar on work management and sort of collaboration drag, and I get 100 people signing up, but only 20 people show up, I will tell you that those 80 people are no less qualified than the 20 that showed up. The signal I want is someone that says, this topic of collaboration drag was worth me showing up, was worth me raising my hand. So when I follow up with people that attended or didn't attend that event, I don't want to say, thanks for signing up for the webinar. Would you like to see a demo of our solution? What I want to say instead is say, thanks for signing up for the webinar. Why did you do that? What about this topic is prescient right now? What's going on inside your organization that meant that collaboration drag was enough of a flag in your brain that you signed up for something to learn more about it? That's the conversation I want to have. And that's how I can start to get to more of those poised prospects. Now, that is not a sales-ready opportunity. That is not someone that has committed to change or is actively buying, but something's going on there. And that is a signal that I can lean in on and say, what are you working on? And I can also then say, listen, don't ask your customers what keeps them up at night. Tell them what should they be keeping them up at night. Know enough about your audience to say, when I talk to people that are exhibiting signs of collaboration drag, they tend to worry about these three things the most, and list those things off and say, which of those three things I just listed that your peers are worried about is making you sweaty just thinking about it because you're worried about it too? Or better yet, which of those three things are you not thinking about yet? But now that you know that most of your peers are worried about it, do you want to know why? Now, by asking questions and by helping them think through this, I'm providing value in that conversation. I've got evidence that there's a need. I'm starting to quantify the need in their eyes. I'm also providing enough insights. Like, that prospect's going to get off that call. I might have paid for that sales call. Like, I got insights out of that. It changed the way I think about things. There's information that I can't unlearn that is starting to loosen the status quo of the way we've always been doing things. And that's where commitment and that's where change starts.
Yes. This is really good. You're really smart. I like this.
I'm just making this up as I go, Joel.
Perfect. Me too. Hey.
This is the dirty little secret, I think, for like everybody is like, even like the people that you think like, boy, that guy's brilliant, or boy, I need to learn more from her. It's like, I think we call it, like, we flippantly say, like, I'm making this up as I go. But like, the older I get, the more I actually think, like, all the stuff that we read and learn, all of our experiences, like, I'll read a book and get really pissed that I can't remember most of it, right? Mm-hmm. I'll read a book and like be like, even like a month later, I'm like, I just can't remember most of the main points of that unless I went back and looked at it again. But it's up there. Right. Yeah. And I'm convinced now, having learned a little more about brain science, that when we are faced with a question or situation or challenge, our brain accesses information that isn't top of mind, that isn't right there, that you can recall immediately. And so the sum of those experiences, the sum of everything we have learned and done and read and educated ourselves on, comes out in the making this up as we go. And we get better at making it up the more we do that.
Yeah, we are very much like neural networks. We can compress things down into vectors and then somehow still leverage it.
Yeah, vectors is a much better way of saying what I took a lot of time to say. So.
Have you ever looked into the forgetting curve?
No.
So the forgetting curve is a mathematical and visualized way to understand the connection between how we consume information and the rate at which we forget information.
Oh.
So there's a direct correlation to if I hear someone give an hour talk versus if I read a book versus if I, you know, how I consume this. I started doing research when the podcast started to get popular. I was giving talks. Mm-hmm. And what I learned really quickly after getting off stage giving a talk, I'd say, oh, what's your favorite part? And they could remember very, very little of what they just listened to me talk to for like 40 minutes. And so then I said, all right, well, I'm going to get better at making talks. If they only realize one or two things, instead, I'm going to design my talk with the two bullet points of the two things I want them to remember and do everything else in those minutes to reinforce those two points.
That's right.
Because why does it even matter if no one remembers it anyways? If it's all, if I have all these brilliant insights and thoughts and points, and stuff, it's completely useless if they're only gonna remember two things. It's way better I be conscious of those two things that are the best two things and absolutely crush them. And I think Josh, that's not the graphic that I was looking for, but there is a graphic that shows like by medium, it'll tell you like ads and The short of it is, the nerd way is, we forget at the rate of 1 bit per neuron per second. It's a fun rabbit hole.
Well, I mean, there's a reason why, you know, some of the most basic, you know, speaking advice is, you know, go tell them what you're going to say it, then tell them what you said. Right. And you're absolutely right. Like when you can add an element of storytelling to that, like instead of just reciting facts, but to put those facts in context and to tell stories in different angles that reinforce that one or two messages, it's really powerful. It really does, you know, separate those people that, you know, that give talks and that do presentations and those that give real keynotes, right? That those, the really sought after speakers have mastered what you're talking about.
Yeah. Once I was getting paid to do it, I was like, all right, I got to figure out how to actually do it.
Drop my game now. Yeah. Yeah. Of course.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, man. I have so many more questions for you, but let's talk about your podcast and tell people about that so that we can make them aware of it.
Sure. So my podcast, Sales Pipeline Radio, we've been doing it for almost 7 years now. And it's simple. It's just an interview style. We try to keep it to 15, 20 minutes. Like what I try to say is like, listen, by the time you leave your house to go to the grocery store and come back, you can probably listen to a whole episode. And we just bring in sort of what I think are interesting thinkers in sales and marketing. People that are thinking more broadly about just what's happening tactically. And, you know, even though we call it Sales Pipeline Radio, the majority of our listeners are on the marketing side. So I really do bring in more people that are in sales than I do in marketing. I think it's really, really important that marketers understand selling better. Even if you haven't carried a bag, and I certainly didn't before I started my own gig, understanding sort of just what it takes to be successful at selling makes you a better marketer, makes you a better leader.
I don't think I have anything to add. You're exactly right, though. It blows my mind when I meet the marketing people that don't understand how the sales process actually works, while they're the ones responsible for creating content to help the salespeople do their job.
Well, and even things as ignorant as like, why didn't they follow up with all the leads? Like, well, let's go look through the leads, right? Like their phone numbers are wrong. This person hasn't worked at that company for 3 years. We sell enterprise software and this guy works at a company with 3 people, right? And so like it's, on one hand, it's the nature of the beast, right? Like this stuff is messy. Like we do this for a living, and when we do our own programs, like keeping lists up to date and fresh is a nightmare. It always has been and it probably always will be. Mm-hmm. But then just know that the sausage making includes that, and have a way to mitigate it, like have a way to fix it, have a way that you can quickly update and augment information, even if you have to do it through a separate step and through maybe even manually. But if you can figure out how to do that at scale, you're going to be far more successful.
Let's wrap up with a little bit of advice. So a lot of our people, they're tech leaders or they're entrepreneurs as well. They're trying to grow their companies. Everyone deals with marketing and sales pipeline to some degree.
Yeah.
What's like the one or two things that, or let's just start with the one thing. What's the one thing they can go do with their sales pipeline that's going to help them? And then they'll take that proof, be like, Matt's brilliant. And then they'll call you up and want to work with you.
Take yourself out of the message as much and as early as possible. The later you wait in the sales process to talk about yourself, the better off you're going to be and the more people are going to want to listen to you. If you're thinking about a buying journey, if you're thinking about sales stages, and the first stage is just awareness, second stage is a loosening of the status quo, helping someone see that there may be a different, better outcome, and then a commitment to change, all of those stages can be accomplished without saying anything about what you do, because what you do is secondary at that point to the prospect committing to change on their own behalf. It doesn't yet matter what the solution is. Hardware, software, magic, dragons, pixie dust, doesn't matter. You're trying to get a prospect to understand that the current world is broken, that the future is uncertain, but they need to do something differently to achieve a better outcome moving forward. All of that can be done without talking about yourself. One of my favorite exercises to do with marketing teams, but especially when we get to do sort of sales kickoffs and company kickoffs, we'll get in a room and say, listen, okay, here's the deal. Pick a prospect you want to sell to. And think about the two or three people that are key members of the buying committee that you need to get engaged. And I want you to like put the names of those people or put the titles on the left-hand side. And sort of from left to right, you've got, you know, loosen, challenge the status quo, and commit to change. What is the message you would give to each of those people at each of those stages? What's the conversation? What are the talking points? What are the bullets that you would have in each of those boxes? My only rule is you can't talk about yourself. My only rule is you cannot mention your company. My only rule is you can't talk about your features in any part of that discussion. You realize when you put that rule in place how hardwired we are to talk about ourselves. Even when we ask a prospect a question about them, we want to immediately put it in context of something that we do or something we sell. And when you do that too early in the process, the prospect stops listening. Because the prospect wants to hear about themselves. They want to talk about themselves. They want to understand what their situation is and how to make their situation better. And it is not immediately with your product. That comes later. You earn the right to have that conversation by talking about the prospect and their problems first.
Yeah, that's, I can validate that for sure. One of the things, because we have a sales team here, and I join sales calls, and the more I'm involved with sales calls, the more sales we get. And one of the differentiations I found was, some of the sales team was, they'll ask that question, that initial mm-hmm. question, and then immediately go to, oh, we've got the product that can solve that. Yeah. And they're like, well, we're doing what you said, Joel. Like we're yeah. listening to them. We're talking. It's like, no, it's like, you gotta, you know, pull that apart. You know, where are they at in that process? One of the things I've learned on, so we do podcast sponsorships, half of our business. The other half is we make about 20 shows for Fortune 1000 companies. Mm-hmm. So that's how I met like Dominic and all of that from 2X Marketing. But when I was in those sales calls, one of the things I've learned recently was to ask them, is having a podcast for your company, is this something that your leadership team is already sold on doing and you're just looking for a vendor? Mm-hmm. Or are you guys still figuring out if this is the right move for you? Yeah. And that completely dictates how that conversation will go.
Yeah.
Because I found really quickly that I was telling them all about the product and service, knowing that they had a need for it. But then at the very end of the call for like the last 2 minutes, like, well, yeah, this is a great product service. And it, I think it's within our budget, but we don't even have buy-in yet from the team.
Right. Yeah. It's a really good example, right? Of like talking about their situation, where they are. Are they prioritizing a podcast? Do they understand its role in creating and building owned media? Do they understand the difference between owned media and rented media, rented land, rented attention? How does this align with how the organization is thinking about their go-to-market motions moving forward? I mean, you can come in and kind of play that consultant role to ask those questions and ask compelling questions that get them to hopefully think differently and better about their situation. But it also helps set the table for you to understand how much work is it going to take to get to the point where you can realistically start talking about an offering. Because I can't sell you anything. I should not. It is irresponsible for me to start talking about services until we've gotten to the point where we have agreed that there's a need for that. And the table setting there is context, it's prioritization, it's consensus building internally. It's a commitment to do something differently from the right people that have authority to do that. And that commitment isn't to buying you. It's not a commitment to buying something. It's a commitment to an outcome. And you are one option of achieving that outcome. Now, you're the incumbent since you helped them get to that commitment. But you got to do the groundwork there. Sometimes that's a quick conversation. Sometimes that takes time. But I tell you, 3 steps are faster than one if you can get to that commitment and then they're actually sticking with the process to make a decision on based on that commitment.
You are a wealth of knowledge. We made a podcast. Thank you so much for doing this, Matt.
Yeah, of course.
Thank you so much for listening. And if you found this episode useful, please share it with a friend or a colleague who you think would get value from it. And if you have topics that you'd like to hear discussed on the podcast, either add me on LinkedIn or send me an email, joel@moderncto.io. Every time I get an email or a LinkedIn message, it absolutely makes my day and inspires me to keep going.